Area Voices tells the arts, culture, and history stories of Northern Minnesota. And this morning, I have the great privilege of talking with somebody who is just one of those people who inspire and positively influence the world they walk through in so many ways that it's sort of mind-blowing. Sam Sachi Sampson is an interdisciplinary artist, a powwow and hoop dancer. He's a painter, and he's now based in Grand Rapids, and he's with me this morning. And we're going to be talking about several things that sort of bridge Indigenous tradition with modern times. Thank you for joining me this morning, Sam Sachi.
Yeah, good morning. It's good to be here. I was looking forward to this. So it's good that we can finally talk and share stories.
Oh, I'm so glad you were able to come in this morning. Would you want to talk a little bit first about your Indigenous heritage, like the clans that you're part of and that sort of thing?
Yeah, sure. Okay. So on my dad's side, I'm Muscogee Creek, which is based out of Okmulgee, Oklahoma, formerly like Alabama, Georgia area. And then on my mother's side, I'm Seneca. And then the clan lineage for there is a Snipe clan. So, yep, that's my mom and dad. So that's, that makes up who I am.
And you and your brother are both well-renowned hoop dancers. I wondered if you could talk about hoop dancing itself. Like, I've seen hoop dancing and it's obviously mesmerizing to watch, but I wondered if you could talk about what it means exactly and sort of.
So hoop dancing for a lot of tribes or nations, it was a healing dance or a very ceremonial dance. And that was usually done at a time when people or the community needed healing. The first like documented ones, I guess that you could say would be down in the Southwest around like the Pueblo or the Hopi nations, that they were like the first like photographed or videoed hoop dancers. And that's kind of where a lot of people originate the story of the hoop dance. But a lot of tribes did have their own story or version of a hoop dance, so it's not as well documented or versed. For my brother and I, we started hoop dancing when I must have been like 7. My brother just turned 6. So I'll be 40 this year. So we've been doing it for about 33 years. So yeah, it's been a long journey. It's been pretty amazing at where the hoop dance has taken us. So. And in general context of hoop dance, what it does is it represents how everything is connected, how one thing turns into another thing, how like just how the world and how everything like shifts from one thing to another and how it comes cycles back around. So it has a lot of like symbolism with nature and cycles and circles.
And you guys started when you were young.
Yeah. So my brother and I, we grew up in Los Angeles area. And then my mom, who had met her dad, who was in the film work, we were living in Los Angeles. And Los Angeles has a huge Indigenous Native population that, like, whether through being displaced or through the Indian Act or just trying to find work, there was a lot of, like, Native people that lived in the area. And one of the ways that a lot of Native people kept an involvement culturally was through the powwow circuit and whatnot. So my brother and I, my mom had us dancing since like the time we could walk all the way up to now. So we've been dancing pretty much all our lives in a sense. And then growing up in Los Angeles, there's like a huge, like a melting pot of cultures. So we had like different styles of dance that we learned how to do, from like modern jazz to like Latin style dances to like ballroom to East Coast swing or triple time swing. So we kind of like were able to bring all those styles and add it to our own styles, and that allowed us to be more diverse or versatile with different musics and different genres, and that we were able to move in different music types, and it kind of allowed us to like just not be tied to strictly powwow or ceremonial dances. So.
Can you talk about just that power of dancing at powwow, like what that does to you?
That powwow is like, it's like performing for different audiences. And like when you're dancing for your own people or your own community, there's a lot more affirmation of people, like when they compliment you, it means a lot more than when it's just like for different audiences around the world. But when it's your own community, like it means a lot more when they affirm that what you're doing is a good thing. Because sometimes like a lot of like Native folk are very quiet when I watch things, and so like sometimes like, am I doing a good job? Are they getting my style dance, or am I doing something wrong? But when they come up to you and compliment you, then they're like, all right, I'm doing good, so I can keep doing what I'm doing and stuff. So, but yeah, I think it's a lot more powerful when you're performing in your own communities or for your own people, and then it means a lot more. And then the elders really are very proud because they kind of see that lineage continue on to the next generation, so they don't have to worry about the culture being lost in a sense.
And then, and you guys do a lot of sharing of the dance and other dancing too with other communities. And I wondered if you could talk about what you love about that aspect of sharing that part of your culture.
So for me, my view is that the styles that we're sharing, like the powwow styles, are the ones that were meant to be shared with the greater community, and not only just Indigenous, but anyone else that wanted to learn or even like participate. Like if they knew the stories or the meaning behind each of the dances, like I don't have a problem with them trying it or coming into the circle, as long as they're doing it in a respectful way that they know the stories of what it means to be dancing a particular style, because each one has its own responsibilities. So that was what the purpose of the powwow was to keep that cultural ties, and in a sense it became our own kind of like Sunday gathering in a sense, because we would see like friends and family from all over the place, and we'd meet new friends and family, and depending on where you were too. And then many of the tribes, they still have their own very ceremonial sacred dances they don't really share with anybody. But for me, I believe like powwow was meant as a tool to share with the world like our way of life and way of being, and then also do it in a way that made it exciting or very colorful and very like making it an experience for people to come to join in or share.
How did you end up in Grand Rapids? I mean, because you're from LA, right?
that's a lifetime story, but I think it's a really good story. I'll tell my wife, Fonz, like, we should maybe write this down. This could be like a movie someday. I bounced around the country quite a bit. So after Los Angeles, my mother had moved us to Bismarck, North Dakota. I spent most of my high school career there, and then final semester of my senior year, we moved to Wisconsin Dells because we were performing in the Dells for a bit, and then we moved to my mother's reservation up in upstate New York, which is like south of Buffalo, and called the Cattaraugus Indian Reservation. And I was up there for a few years. I was working at smoke shops and pumping gas, doing graveyard shift. And then I went to Haskell Indian Nations University down in Kansas, was working on my AA there. Then I went back up to New York, finished my AA. And I'm like, all right, well, I tried doing like science or math based degrees, like environmental science or education. And I'm like, this doesn't really like spark my flame or my passion. So like, I was like, I'll just go back to what I was originally good at, was just doing art. And so I applied to art schools around the nation, and I got accepted to all of them. And I was like, but like the choice of where was gonna be like the deciding factor. It's like, well, New York is like crazy high cost of living. LA is like way far away. I'd be kind of like on my own out there. And then I was like, well, Chicago's kind of like a halfway. Like I've been around the Midwest quite a bit. So I'm like, we'll go to Chicago. So, and that was still kind of a culture shock, because like Chicago being one of those big mega cities, it's like the learning curve of having to jump onto public transportation was like kind of like scary at first, like very anxious. But once I got the hang of it, I was like, all right, like I can ride the trains all day, and I can ride the buses all day and get to where I want to be, and I don't even need a car. So I was just like walking around and catching the public transportation all around Chicago. And while I was at Chicago, my now wife, Fawn, she came to audition for The Voice, and she had did a fibrid fundraising sale. She won a few $100 at the casino. Like everything was just lining up for her to come to Chicago. And she gets there, like she does the audition. She doesn't get onto The Voice, but she decides to go to this venue that had a live band karaoke night that night. And my friends, because I live like by Lake Michigan, and I was like at Rivers Casino, so it was like about a an hour drive from me just to get over there. And so I don't really go there very often because it's kind of so far away. And it was like middle of January too, so it was really cold. So I'm like, I don't want to go out there. But my karaoke friends are like, oh, you just come sing some songs, it'll be fun or whatever, because we're going to a live band thing. I'm like, fine, let's go. And so we get there, and I walk in, and I was like, oh, there's a native woman singing. And my friend, she's black, she goes, how do you know she's native? I go, well, she's got the high cheekbones, and then she's got some beaded earrings. And they're like, oh, okay, that's awesome, whatever. And they're like, you should go talk to her. I'm like, no, she's got like three lady friends with her. That's like walking into a Shark Tank. So, so I'm like, I was just hanging out with my group of friends, and then they were going up to get some drinks, and Fawn was up at the bar, and then my friend was up at the bar at the same time, and she's stroke up conversation with her. She's, are you native? And Fawn's like, yeah, I'm native. And then she's, oh, that's awesome, my friend's native too, whatever. So I was up singing my song, and then I come back to my seat, and she's sitting there. I'm like, oh man. So
Oh.
yeah, it was a once in a like a lottery ticket winning meeting. And we just started talking. We were talking about like academics, our education, culture, and then we just exchanged numbers. And then I was like, well, maybe I'll see her again, maybe I won't, because she was from out of state. So I'm like, well, maybe not. But like next week she calls and asks what I'm doing, and then she was in town for another thing. I'm like, oh, okay. And then another week goes by, and then she's like, I'm going to a Tribe Called Red concert. Like, can you come to that? I'm like, funny thing, I'm actually opening up for that show. And she's like, oh, I'll see you there then. So like
Wow.
we just kind of kept talking. Then she moved to Chicago, and then like I graduated with my BFA, and then we moved to Minneapolis, and we bounced around Burnsville, Bloomington, and St. Paul for a bit. And then when like the pandemic happened, and then the George Floyd thing happened, we're like, well, we just had our one boy at the time. So I was like, well, let's move somewhere closer to the woods, because I'd rather have our kids playing in the woods than in the streets. So we came up to Grand Rapids, and my wife, she's from Deer River, and she's Leech Lake. So that's kind of how I ended up in northern Minnesota. But I've really been enjoying my time here, and I think it's a great place for families. So
Yeah. So, I wanted that's actually I wasn't expecting the segue to work so well, but I wanted to talk you talked about art school in that story. And I know you've had at least one quite big show in Grand Rapids recently, and I love your art has such a modern flair, and I do think it just it's this bridge between modern times and indigenous tradition. It's this sort of mashup that is so cool. I wondered if you could talk about your visual art.
So when I was finishing up my BFA, I had this we had to do a final like thesis art gallery showing pieces. So I was trying to figure out what I was going to do for my contribution. And one of my teachers had suggested that maybe I do like what he called an analytical abstraction. So what that is like you take a photograph or a still or still life of something, and you focus on one aspect of that photo or image, and then like whether it be a curves or straight lines that are found in the image, and then you start layering those. So like each layer would be a different aspect of that photo. And then once you layer enough of them together, they kind of create this cool abstraction of the original image or a picture. And so they're like, well, maybe you should apply that to like some of your performances or the videos that you have from like your performances, because like they knew I performed a lot. So like they had no issue with me missing class or actually being a working artist. So I was like, isn't that the goal, is to be a working artist? And they're like, yeah.
Right.
So so they allowed me to like skip more days than was allowed by like most of the students. So but it turned out to be lead to something really cool, where I did create two images. One was of a jingle dress dancer, and one was of a fancy shawl. And then when I got to Grand Rapids, my boss at McCroskey, she and then along with Fawn, are like, hey, you should do a show for the Rife, and because they're looking for art for September, October for an Indigenous Peoples Day. And this is at the beginning of the summer, so I'm like, I got 3 months, I think I can knock out a few more pieces. So I ended up doing six more, and they were based off like dances that are found around the Great Lakes, from like my tribe to Ojibwe tribe. So like there are like styles that kind of like represented that,
Yeah.
and they turned out really amazing. And I was like, oh, I found my niche here, or my niche. And then I was like, I think I could keep doing these and do more and more and more of them. And then like like when the weather's warm, because like right now I did four more for I have a show going down to St. Paul at the Springboard for the Arts Building,
Oh,
but I ended
excellent.
up doing four more for that one, and I kind of like delved in more some like the powwow styles that my brother and I do. So it's kind of it's growing and it's kind of becoming its own thing. So it's and then once I got them going, it was just like they kind of took on their own life and their own energy. And then like a lot of people compliment like they have such movement and such color, and they're like, I'm not quite sure what they are, but as I learn more, I'm probably figure out what it means more. Like, and that's kind of like what I wanted as an artist. And when people see them at first, they look very modern, very like abstract. But once you start realizing what they are, it kind of tells a more of an in-depth story.
Do you want to talk about your work at the McCroskey?
So when we got to Grand Rapids, it was middle pandemic, so like everyone was scrambling for places to live or like moving or shifting around. A lot of people were moving from the big cities to rural spaces. So I was like, well, I need to find some work, because like in the cities I would do Uber and Lyft during my downtime from shows. But when the pandemic happened, like all the shows stopped, a lot of the art things like got canceled, and had to do some Zoom performances, which is another weird aspect of trying to do live performance over Zoom. So I was looking for work, and I was like, I was gonna like either be like a UPS truck loader or unloader, or work for FedEx, or like something with the loading unloading. And then Fawn goes, oh, this job at the art gallery popped up, and it was for like the art gallery store management. And I'm like, oh, I'll go apply for there. And then I got to meet Katie over there, and then this other lady, Krista, she applied too. And she was like, well, you two are both amazing. Like Chrissy, she had a lot of art gallery management from Colorado, and then like I had like this lifetime art experience from like working in the arts. So like we can't pass you up, both of us. So I kind of wrote positions for both of us. So I had to be more of the outreach coordinator, so I get to travel around the indigenous communities and work with their artists and network with them and collaborate with them. So it's been a lot of fun, and I really got to meet like the art community in northern Minnesota. So it's been really amazing, and I think it's building a better community up in this way too. So it's been exciting, because it's kind of like revitalizing the whole art scene up here. So
Yeah, we're so glad you're here. I just want to note too, just sort of a fun fact about you. Your dad is Will Sampson. Was I mean, he's not with us anymore, but he's who is Chief Bromden, Chief Broom from the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and he too was a painter, and that.
That was like the reason that we ended up in LA. And also another crazy thing is too, so like when my grandmother moved my mother and her sister out to California, she went to Berkeley for American Indian Studies, and then later on transferred to nursing. But when they got there, they didn't have the family housing or dorms set up for them. So my grandmother and my mother and my aunt, they ended up staying with AIM members for like the first month. So and I was like, it comes back around, or like AIM like kind of started in Minnesota. So I'm like, this is weird how everything's connected and comes back around.
Full circle. I mean, certain. I think, and I'm looking at the picture behind you, the hoop dance, the hoops. It's like this whole circular thing, huh?
And that's where like my mother met my father, and then things just kind of kept happening for them down towards Los Angeles and stuff. But like my father, he was kind of did a lot of different jobs like before becoming an actor. He was a bronc rider for rodeos and won a few like contests for that. He was a lineman working on the power lines, and then before he got discovered for Cuckoo's Nest, he was working up at as like a park ranger up in Yakima, Washington. And he would only come down to town like every few weeks to get supplies from the town there, and then go back up, and then he would just work on his paintings and just work as the park ranger up there, or one of the park rangers. And then when they were casting for Chief Bromden, they go down to the Southwest to try to find a big Indian, and they're like, well, I don't find anyone that's big Indian down this way. So one of the producers, his friend owned a car dealership up in Yakima, Washington, and he's like, well, have you seen any native or indigenous men? They're like, big, could you let us know, and then we can like fly them out there for a screen test or audition. And so it happened to be one of those moments where my dad came down to town to get supplies, and the car dealership guy introduced himself, and then he told his friend, he's like, It's like, I found your Indian, like biggest Indian I ever saw, or whatever. And so they flew him on a plane down to Mexico, and it comes off the plane, and then the director and the producer was like, "Well, can he talk? Can he speak?" And they're like, no, he doesn't even need to speak. He's just silent." But because he was such an imposing figure on screen, and that, like, it just made the whole film work. And
Wow.
the film was such a great film, and like his character was like the overture that built into the crescendo, and it kind of like finished it off, finished the movie off. So.
Wow, that story and your whole story are such lessons in like being open to life and just like staying in life and just keeping going, and it's like gonna work out. It's
I say that
really
more often than I should, and my wife gets mad about that. She's like, "I don't know how you do it, but it just happens that things happen and we're all right."
It's so wonderful. So you've got a show coming up at the Springboard for the Arts.
So I go down, let's see, I think it's in middle February 17th. So I go down on the 16th to install, but it'll be on the 17th down there.
Okay, so we can
Yeah.
catch
So if
that.
anyone's around and we want to check out some art by myself and then a little performance by me and my brother, yeah, we'll be down there.
Well, wonderful. Well, thanks for stopping in this morning and talking with me, and congratulations on just all this positive trajectory in your life, and thanks for sharing your art, your many kinds of art
Thank
with
you.
the
Thank you. I
world.
appreciate
So,
it.
all right. You have a great day.
Yep, you too.
All right, thanks. That's Samsachi Sampson. He is an artist who is now in the Grand Rapids area, and Area Voices is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.